Hello and welcome to another episode of Golbazan Podcast. I'm Sino Soemion, your host for today. I'm joined by one of our regular panellists, Pejman Upars. Pejman, it's good to speak to you again.
Hi Sino, nice to be back. Lovely to hear from you and the new guys.
Thank you, Pejman. We also have, as Pejman mentioned, we have two new contributors to the podcast. So I'm very pleased to welcome Otbin Moayedi. Otbin, great to speak to you. Great to have you on. How you doing?
Hi, thanks, Sino. Yeah, great to join you guys and get involved in the podcast.
Perfect. And Samson Tamijani is also joining us from the States. Samson, you okay?
Yeah, I'm happy to join y'all. It's I've heard a lot about y'all, and I figured it'd be useful to add in what I have, because I mean, me and my whole family followed Team Elite for a long time, and yeah, I'm just happy to put in anything I can offer.
Perfect. So we'll get started. As you all know, Iran under 20s qualified for the World Cup this summer, which took place in South Korea. It was the first time that we qualified for this tournament, I think, since the 1970s. So it was long overdue. We qualified for this tournament having played in the AFC Under-19s Championship last year, which became fourth in the tournament. We were grouped with Zambia, Portugal, and Costa Rica. We came bottom of the group with 3 points, so we were knocked out. But first question, I'm going to come to you, Pejman, is going into the tournament, what were your expectations of the team, and what were you expecting for this team to achieve?
Well, I was actually hoping for a qualification, because, you know, in when you're playing these kind of tournaments, being Portugal or being like one of the bigger teams don't necessarily mean that you're actually one of the better teams at this level. And seeing the Iranian squad with some really interesting players like Shekari, I was like, well, maybe there is it's our time to shine at this kind of level. So that was my expectations before the tournaments, and even after the first game as well.
Otbin, as Pejman just mentioned, we started really well. We managed to beat Costa Rica by 1-0, albeit it was a very late goal in, I think, around the 80th minute. But it was a good start, you know, a clean sheet, a 1-0 win, a very solid performance. So hopes were high going into the second game against Zambia, and of course the third game being against Portugal. What do you think went wrong after the game against Costa Rica? What could we have done better to qualify for the second round? And also, were your thoughts similar to Pejman, in the sense that going into the tournament, were you expecting Iran to go into the second round?
Yeah, so no, your first question, I think what started going wrong, I think some of the flaws that you see in the team is that defensively just started breaking down a bit. When against Zambia, we scored two first half goals, and then played, I think they scored their first goal in the 54th minute or something, or perhaps even later. So it was quite relatively late on, and you could see that the defense was just starting to sit deeper, defending more narrowly as well, and just inviting the you know, quite sharp, pacey Zambia defenders who kind of stretched that narrow defense, and ultimately, that first goal that we conceded, which started leading to the crumbling down of the team, was because of two mistakes. You had a cross coming in from the centre, or the left ball coming in, and one of our defenders missed the header, and then that floated over to the next defender, and then you had one of the Zambians coming in behind him. And then after that, it just became deeper and more narrow. So I think we just needed to keep playing like we've been playing against Costa Rica, and in the first half where we were attacking, not sitting back, inviting chances, because you're just going to get burnt when that happens. So I think that's where we started going wrong, and then the confidence obviously fell and the pressure came on. With regards to the expectations, yeah, I had similar expectations to Peshman. I think he made a very good point when he said that you get in these youth tournaments, it's not all about the quality and of the players. You kind of get that youth factor and the lack of fear, which can give players that spark. We saw Sweden winning the youth. Was it the under 23s or the 21s? I can't really remember. Peshman, you were definitely
Yeah, under 20, under 21s in 2015.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. Yeah, so you kind of have that, and you've got a team that isn't on paper the strongest, but performs really well. So yeah, I had high expectations, and especially after the first game, yeah, it was kind of a classic Carlos Queiroz game in the sense that we only scored one goal, although that's been improved on in the last few games by the national team. But yeah, no goals conceded, a clean sheet, and one goal, although we should have scored more and we should have scored earlier. But so the expectations were there. And I think that might have resulted to that that deep defence later on when we're 2-0 up.
Samson, my personal view is that when you go into these tournaments, you know, when it's the under-20s, under-21s, is that what really matters is the experience of these players. And as I said, considering the fact that Iran don't usually compete in these tournaments, how important do you think that experience is of playing against I don't want to say some of the best teams, but you know, it's an international tournament where you get to play against different types of football, and yes, the result might have been disappointing, but do you also think that the experience will be valuable for these players going forward in their careers?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when guys are young and you know, still have not fully grown, and the fact that they're getting this much exposure, it's a great first step from any fan or writer's point of view, and the fact that they have the exposure of playing teams of you know, from different continents, in Korea, I believe it was. You know, it's anytime that's happening, that's an important step, and especially with Kurosh overseeing a lot of what's going on. You know, you can't be too negative with not advancing. So, you know, from someone who's usually a little bit critical, you know, I can't be pessimistic of you know, not advancing or whatever. But it was an important first step, and I don't think we'll see a lot more shortages of time spent at these tournaments. I think before you know it, we'll be expected to advance in a youth tournament, especially, you know, more players going playing in Europe, being found in different clubs in Iran, and then moving on to Europe, to all these other places. I mean, it's only a good thing what's going on. The fact of the matter is they were seen, and a lot of them excelled, and so. That's something that will definitely be noted, and I believe that this is not the first time that we'll see those young players on the international level.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially with the point when you said that we're not going to see those gaps between qualifying for these tournaments. I think this team has got great potential, and youth teams are going to follow likewise.
Peshman, this time last year when we took part in the AFC Under-19 Championship, we had a good performance, as I already mentioned, but there was a couple of disappointing results as well, like the game against Saudi Arabia, which ended up 6-5. And that brought a lot of criticism towards the manager, Amir Hossein Epeirovani, and having qualified for the World Cup, which we all agree that it was a great achievement. Some people were calling for him to go, and the FA should bring in someone with more experience of dealing with these tournaments to come in. Having seen the performances and the results in the World Cup last month, are you still in the camp that we should have changed the manager? Maybe he wasn't up to it tactically. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I don't know why we only bring in Peirovanis for the youth teams. You know, we had Balam Hussein, the older brother, and now we have the younger brother, and sooner or later the Afshin Pirone will probably get a youth team as well. I don't know if there will be a big change with another coach or a foreign coach, because the problem is that the youth teams, they are more or less poor. Poor in finances, not in good players. The opportunities for them to develop are really not what we can expect, or we can say like this: the opportunities for them to become those players that we want them to be are not there. So no matter how good of a coach you have in Iran, it's hard to make these youth teams good during a long period of time. Individual good players aren't enough in these young teams, although they matter more when they're young and when they're older. But I don't know if a new coach will do the difference, because the problems, the issues, and that's something we've talked about a long time in Golbezan, is that the problems, they start much earlier. They start like when they're 12, 13 years old. They don't have even proper training camps. They start at, and they continue in the federation, where these players, they don't get the support they need. They start with the poor academies that we have in Iran. So I don't know, like, changing a coach is like the tip of the iceberg. We maybe will qualify next time to the second round if we come to the World Cup, but that won't change the big problem. So for me, I don't know if a big coach will manage to be in Iran with those conditions that they have. I can't see that happening, to be honest.
I agree with you, Pejman. I think if we had to discuss the lack of qualified coaches in the grassroots in Iran, we'd have to record another pod, which will last a couple of hours. But Otbin, we both watched the England under the 20s win the same tournament with Paul Simpson, who is not really a well-known manager. I mean, if you look at his credentials, he managed non-league clubs such as Stockport County and a couple of other teams within the same level. So he doesn't really stand out as that great of a coach, but he won the tournament with England. That lack of credential was somewhat aimed at Peirovani, saying, again, this guy has not achieved much. But when it comes to youth football, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. What do you think? Do you think, again, I asked you the same question as I did with Pejman, that maybe a manager with better technical knowledge would have made a difference? Or do you think, Pejman was right in saying, yes, the main issue is that we don't create and develop the right players for these tournaments?
I think Pejman hit the nail on the head there when he said the coach is just the tip of the iceberg. There are, with regards to youth team, you need that whole infrastructure set up for them, and that's unfortunately something we lack, and we might lack in the coming future. But it's we're slowly working on it, and that's something, again, we'll discuss at a later date. But we need more friendlies with better teams across the world. You got the governance of the Iranian FA, which is, you know, that's something in itself that's going to have a detrimental effect on every single aspect of Iranian football, from grassroots up to the national team, and to some extent across even club football. And then the infrastructure and the facilities, all of these things will have effects on players. But what these players do have, and you can tell, there's a certain hunger coming through. And you can see in interviews with them, with the younger players, that they now understand that the national team is an ambition that is burning stronger than it has before Kirosh. So the youth players are now, the youth players and players not in the national teams are now aiming to get there, and they know that going abroad perhaps and seeking opportunities elsewhere can help their development in order to get into their respective men's or youth national teams. So yeah, the coach is something that will have an influence, but there are other more significant factors than just the coach, especially at that youth level. We need to start thinking about the development and the exposure that they get. But we have seen that the tactics weren't quite there, against Zambia in particular. So, and that's entirely on the coach. So perhaps he didn't quite make the right decision. When we were at halftime, I don't know, something must have happened at halftime. We were 2-0 up. He must have just said, I'm guessing he told them just to sit back, because that's not how the team plays naturally, or that's not how they played in the sort of 135 minutes in the first half of the Zambia game and the Costa Rica game. So they sat back and unfortunately we got bit. So I think that's some influence, but there's other things at play as well, other than the coach.
Samson Atvin just mentioned something that really stood out for me about the game against Zambia and the mistakes that Pedro Mani might have made, which cost us the game at half time. How important of a learning curve do you think it is for our coaches as well to go through these tournaments and learn, not just for the players, but for the coaches to go through this process and come back to Iran and share the experience and the knowledge that they gain during these competitions with other coaches?
Well, yeah, that is a good point. I mean, from the broad view, I mean, these coaches get to know these players for how long, if I may ask? Like 10 months, 16 months, maybe the maximum, depends on how long they're there. So, I mean, these are coaches that don't know these players, that aren't, you know, as personal with these players for a long period of time, and the fact that they're still developing says a lot on if, you know, they weren't familiar with their tendencies, or, you know, whether it was just a tactical mistake at the later in the half. But it, you know, from the broad sense, you have to realize, and I know this is poking back at what you guys were talking about a few minutes ago, and you raised up an excellent point about the development from the younger age and at the you know, with the lack of facilities that these younger kids will have. You know, how many volunteer coaches are we seeing in these urban areas where kids are, you know, playing out when they're not in school, they're playing out in the alleys, you know, all day, all night. You know, how many of these volunteer coaches are we seeing that we're used to seeing and maybe federations in Western Europe, or, you know, maybe in just the U.S. You know, dad stepping out and teaching these kids how to play, and, you know, it just goes a long way. And then you add in the fact about the development of them as they become teenagers through treating their body right, with, you know, just learning the basic things. Like I knew I learned when I was becoming an academy player in the latter stages of my teenage years before I switched over to now in college and writing and covering this as a media member. You know, the stuff that I went through, like going to a workout twice a week, the other 3 days having this training, speed training, defending training, you know, all these different aspects led by credentialed coaches that knew what they were doing. They had been trained by associations, federations, all that stuff, and I was exposed to these facilities. And I grew up in a city of about 3-4 million. And going to these facilities in the middle of these poor neighborhoods, of having these fields and having these teams and these leagues available, and having scouts be on hand at these important tournaments. And that's the thing. That's something I think is a shortage right now, at least from what I could tell at this point, is that, you know, having little things such as scouts is not exactly in abundance in Iran. You know, and so it starts from just from the bottom up. When you have the personnel like this in your organization, the coaches can only reach so far, especially if they're only there for a couple months, 6 months, 10 months, 16 months. You know, so and I know you're talking about the specific game, but I thought it was an extraordinary conversation to what you were talking about just a few minutes ago, because that's what affects these players. I think there was a U14 team that that a former Team Elite player took to Germany that was in a tournament. Guys, if you could clarify on that.
FC Kiel, which is Mehdi Madavikia's youth academy, and he's got a couple of former players involved in that as well, such as Edmond Bezik. He's doing great work there, taking them not just to one or two tournaments, but they constantly go around Europe, and I'm sure Pejman can provide more information on this. They go to Sweden very regularly and play in different tournaments that take place there.
Yeah, it doesn't take just one of those teams from this area that Madavikia and his associates are reaching towards and finding these kids. It takes thousands of these kids competing for these spots, thousands of these kids throughout the cities, throughout the rural areas, having the resources of coaches and scouts seeing them at such an early age. That's what's going on in England, I'm sure. It's what's going on in the U.S., I know for sure. Through this program called ODP, I think they call it like Olympic Developmental Players or something like that. But the equivalent of that with the Iranian Federation is definitely going to give our youth programs a huge boost. And when Kirosh first came in, he didn't have that, so he was reaching out to a lot of international players. And I thought it was funny, similar to what Klinsmann was doing in the U.S. with players that are exposed to European ties and getting valuable resources and playing time. That's what Kiros did, and that's how we found Guchanaja and Dejaga and several other guys. And now he's being able to have the system put in place in Iran. And I think that's it's doing great work. But you know, like we said, one team led by a player of enormous cred like Madavikia, founding one team, it's going to have to take a lot more than that. Although we're at a good start, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a process, and we don't have the same budget. We don't have the same support as many of the other footballing nations, or even some of the rivals.
But you know, volunteers, especially if you find these. The culture in Iran is especially just very exuberant with the adults, with dads, you know, and it's little things like that that really jump start it and get the exposure out there with, you know. So
but listen, this is it. You know, we have Iran, we have these facilities, and we have these players, and we have these opportunities. I mean, it's really, to be honest, even for me, it's really easy for us to say that Iran have to develop this and that, they have to put more money on this and start great academies and doing this and that, and they will be great. You know, I don't see that happening anytime soon, and to be honest, I don't know if you guys actually believe that too, even if we have like a coach in Kirosh that tries some of that, but still he's been in Iran in 6 years, and he every now and then threatens to leave because of these problems, and he's like the biggest coach in Iran with more or less a lot of power. So I don't know, I think that we should, I mean, I don't know if it's worth talking about. What we should talk about is how can we try to do the best with what we have, and that's not for us really to answer.
I really like the conversation, and I really want to keep it going, but we already discussed that we're going to do another podcast on youth development and grassroots alone, and the plans that Kirosh has put in place recently in the last couple of months, and what that would mean for Iran within the next 20 years. So let's leave that conversation there. We'll get back to it later on another pod. But In terms of the under-20s and the World Cup itself, we, as it's been already mentioned by you guys several times, we do have some good quality players, with the standout being Reza Shekari, the attacking midfielder who has recently decided to move to Rostov in Russia, which I think is a very good move for him. Just the fact that he's been playing for Zobahan since the age of 17, so it was time for him to move on and try and improve as a player. But there are also a couple of other interesting players like Reza Jafari of Saipa, like Omid Nurafkan of Esteghlal, who has been very impressive, Mohammad Sultani Meher of Saipa, and so on. Osbin, coming to you with this one, what do these players need to do, and what do the clubs need to do to make sure that the players reach their full potential? Because it's something that we've struggled at historically, that we produce good players, really talented players up to the age of 18, 19, but there's that gap between 19 to 23, 24, where the player reaches his full potential, is pretty much the peak of his career, that we struggle with. What do you think, with this generation, the clubs and the players themselves need to do to ensure that they make the most out of their careers and their talents?
One of the main things I think that they need to focus on, and the great thing is that this is something they're aware of, is exposure. So they need exposure to, well, the first team football primarily, but outside of Iran. I think that's the crux of the problem. You've had Jahan Bakhsh, who says it very clearly in his interviews and in many of his interviews, both in English and in Farsi, that he wanted to go abroad. That's where he, and the reason he wanted to go abroad was that he wanted to play for the national team, to not only to be on the radar, but also to develop. And I think that's what players need to do. So they need to get first team football wherever they are, be it in Iran or outside of Iran. And then if they find themselves at a certain point, so like in Shekari, for example, if they've had a certain amount of first-team football and they need that step up, they need that extra challenge, they should look abroad, to go abroad. Now, I don't blame the player if they decide. Of course, I'd rather they go to Europe, but if they decide to go to one of the Arab countries, or to go to, like, South Korea, in this case, with Khalid Shafi, who, quite late in his career, in the autumn of his career, in 29, has gone to Seoul, in South Korea. So, you know, that's something that they need to focus on. Shafi said himself that just in May, before his transfer went through, that he was asked why Iranian teams haven't done as well in the Asian Champions League as some of their other rivals. And he says that one of the main reasons, as well as this, the lack of the weaker finances, he also cited an ambition to leave Iran by young players as one of the reasons. And that's I think that's a good thing. And I think with now players see Jahan Bakhsh, they see Osman, they see Ezatollahi, who went to Atletico Madrid in their C team, as in their youth development team, at what was it, 16, 17? So now there's an increased awareness of the fact that in order to really progress as a player, and particularly as a national team player, you need to leave Iran. But before that, you need to get the appropriate amount of first-team football within Iran and show and make a name for yourself, which is also, you know, quite difficult for just Iranian players to get that exposure.
Samson, as Osbin mentioned, it's really important for the players to make sure they play abroad with a different footballing education than the ones that they're used to. I know that we do have two or three players who've moved to NEC Nijmegen in Holland. But there is also an issue that if these players do not get the exposure and the first in football at their club, then there's no chance a European club would come along and say, look, you know, we'll take you along with, you know, whatever money they have to spend on the player. So how important is it that the clubs understand that these players not only are the future of the national team, but the future of the clubs themselves, and you know, they give them more minutes during the league? So what do you think the FA should do to encourage these clubs to give more opportunities to players within that age group of 18, 19?
Yeah, I mean, it's partially like a in terms of, you know, financial assistance, but like we touched on earlier, that's not huge abundance. But yeah, you're right. It starts with the clubs back at home that these players grow up with. You know, a lot of times these homegrown players excel for their team, like what we've seen at I think for one example, Persa Police, and then they get scouted and examined and invited to a national team camp, and so. So these clubs that may struggle in the Champions League, you know, they have no shortage of players to go out and find. There's no shortage of anything like that. There's really, on paper, from a viewer's perspective, there's no excuse to why there's not a Iranian team in the semifinals and finals of the Champions League every single year. You know, when you look at the talent level and what these clubs can have, you know, there's no way on paper, at least, that they can. But the expansion of having personnel like volunteers going out and filming or writing down notes about these players, finding out more about these players that are in the cities that these clubs are in. You know, it's really not as complex as it may sound to me, at least in my view. You know, financial means and having all these other, you know, branches that you need is obviously another important aspect of it. But you know, on paper, having scouts, having these volunteers that will go out and find and develop these players and have them affiliated with these clubs is definitely something that can be done, because we have for sure top two divisions in the Persian Gulf leagues that they find their own players that they can purchase these players from other domestic clubs, and you know there's definitely a means for doing that and developing players, and because these coaches that find these players and that these players start their careers with, they're usually the coaches that know them best before they get invited to any national team camp, before they get invited to a trial with a foreign team. So I think that's important to look at, because it's definitely something that can be done, and I think absolutely should be done, because the fact that the national team is the 3-4 year reigning best team in Asia, but then their domestic clubs are struggling to find goals and to find wins in the Champions League knockout rounds. I think that's a little troubling. I think something that should definitely be addressed.
Yeah, no, I agree. Can I just, I've just got a question to pose to, I guess, all three of you, the Pejman, in particular. Sometimes I think, would you, in an ideal world, you'd want the Iranian national team to be at this level and then, you know, progress further, but also have Iranian clubs doing really well in the Champions League. But if you could only have one of those things, and I know this is probably just a, you know, I know probably know the answer to this question, and it's just a hypothetical question, but would I assume you'd rather have it this way than the other way around? If you could only have, you know, either clubs performing well or the Iranian national team performing well.
Screw the clubs. I mean, because the Iranian league isn't the best one in Asia. Far from. None of the leagues in Asia have their best national players at their own league. At least none of the good ones. I mean, look at Japan, Australia, and Korea that we see as the best national teams. All of their good players, national players, not all of them, but a lot of them are playing abroad. you can't talk about Saudi and these Arab countries that they stick to their own leagues because maybe they're not good enough or they get a lot of money. I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So, but they're a national team every day for me.
There's also a difference in terms of between Iran and countries like Japan and South Korea. Iran, in club football, they do have the money. They do have the money. If you look at the money that they spend just on wage budget alone on these players, it's ridiculous in comparison to the quality. But the difference is that South Korea and Japan spend the same money, but they spend it on youth development. They spend it into grassroots and their academies. So when the players, obviously develop, then they sell them on for a profit. In Iran, we spend that money on players who are already well into their 20s. Okay, you're never going to get anywhere with that kind of mentality and that kind of approach. The clubs will never improve and the football will always stay on the same level. So the FA needs to bring in an incentive for these clubs not to spend that much money on players who are already developed. We need to start spending that money into youth academies. I've listened to many coaches in Iran, managers and coaches, first team managers and youth coaches, that the difference between what a first team manager is paid in comparison to youth coach is absolutely enormous, and that gap needs to be shortened. There needs to be an incentive for the coaches as well to get into youth clubs. Otherwise, if I'm a coach, I have a family to support. I need the money. Where is the money? It is in the first team. So there's literally no motivation for me to work in youth academy. So I think that's one thing that also hinders the clubs in the long term, in the bigger picture, when it comes to things like the Champions League. Also, when you don't have a great league, it encourages players to move abroad, as we have seen. Look at countries, even in Asia, like Saudi Arabia, or even China, or in Europe, look at the Russian league. How many players in the Russian national team play abroad? None, because they get paid so much money, and there's so much money involved in the Russian league that there is no motivation for the players to go and play in other European countries. So maybe there is a lot of, benefit into the league not developing, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try our best to make sure that the clubs are performing at the levels of other Asian countries. But I don't know if you guys agree or...
No, I think I would definitely agree with that point. As I said earlier, I think that ambition of moving abroad, moving to Europe, is there and it's growing, and it's coming into players' minds at a younger age. So, and that's what we need. We don't want our players to be moving out of Iran into Europe in their mid to late 20s. We want them to go. Ideally, in the very late teens or in the very early 20s, get a bit of first team football for at least a season or so in Iran, and then make a move if you have the opportunity. Just, I think that's what they should do, and they should take it. And that's what that fear that might have existed in the past of moving abroad, which you can understand completely, that might have dissipated somewhat now that players have seen Dambach and Ezatollahi and Tirosh saying himself that he wants players to move. And I think that encourages players, and they get comforted also by the fact that Tirosh will pick up on that. So we've had Khabir Ezai, and he has played for the national team, but not too much. Is it three caps or something? And he is now moved at the age of 25, so not too late. He moved to Belgium, to Charleroi. He finished fifth in the Belgian league last year. So hopefully he can get some good exposure, become better, score some goals, and get himself a solid spot in an already well-performing Iranian offensive line. I mean, Tarani has been doing really well, of course, with Azmoun. We also have Ansari Fahd, so we have some good strikers. and hopefully he can add to that. But he also plays a bit. He's not an out and out striker, though, is he? I'm going slightly off tangent here. But is he an out and out number nine, or
who's that? Sorry, I didn't catch the name.
Kavir Azai.
Yeah, he's a centre forward. Who's I think he's very unique in the sense that we don't have a lot of strikers the way he plays. He's like a playmaker kind of striker where he brings in a lot of his midfielders into the game. Really interesting player. But that's a perfect segue into the next section, Altabin, which is we're going to discuss the recent transfers that have happened, or the rumours that have been going around. And I'm going to start with the same player that you mentioned, Kavir Azai. Pejman, what are your thoughts on that transfer? Because when the rumours started, I didn't think that he would leave because he's so settled in Esteghlal. And usually players who are playing for Esteghlal and Persepolis, and they are household names in those two clubs, they tend to stay and not really have that hunger to go and play in Europe or abroad in general. So how impressed were you with that decision, and how do you think he will succeed in Europe, or do you think it's going to be a case of like a Ramin Rezaian last season where he decided to come back, or even like Sajjad Shahbazadeh, who only stayed in Turkey for a season?
Well, I was surprised and shocked, actually, to be honest. Kavir Azai have been a special player ever since, like, he was in the under-17 World Cup or something like that. He started off and became a name for himself, and it took some time for him to develop in the Iranian league, and now had a good year in Esteghlal. For me, the surprise was not for him only going to Europe, because hopefully more and more youngsters are going to Europe, just as the guy said, and that's a lot of due thanks to Queiroz, and I think he sees that opportunity to at least be in the World Cup squad. But we don't see so many Iranians in Belgium. I think we have like my man Yazdani back in the time.
That's right. Same club as well.
Yeah. There are some Iranian connections there, but these kind of clubs. A lot of European countries and clubs are kind of afraid of bringing in Iranian players because they don't know what they get. They're not used to them. They don't know what to expect of when it comes to mentality, when it comes to dedication, when it comes to being a professional athlete. And also the language itself. That's why these countries, they have a lot of players from Morocco, from Africa in general, and Brazilians are everywhere, so you don't even have to talk about them. So the club is making a little bit, taking some risks with bringing in a striker also. I think that Rezaev will get his chances and his opportunities to play for Charleroi in Charleroi, I think it's pronounced something like that, in Belgium. He needs to take them quite fast, because he's far from unreplaceable. He's not the guy they will count on. I don't think that's why they bought him. I think for Kave, it's a good decision in terms of being a football player, and also in terms of growing mentally, and having the guts, so to speak, to leave Esteghlal isn't easy, because for many Iranian players, that's like the peak of your career. You can't top Persepolis and Esteghlal. All respect to him and his choice, and I hope he'll do well and hopefully earn himself a spot for the squad in 2018 World Cup.
Samson, considering Kavir Azai's move to Belgium, looking at it, for me it seems like he's really desperate to be involved in the national team. Having seen Karim Ansari Farr, Sardar Azmoun, Reza Ghoochabnejad, even Mehdi Taremi really cementing their place within the squad. He's that's what I think. That's what's motivated him to move to Europe as an attempt to force his way into the national team plans within the next 12 months ahead of the 2018 World Cup. But also another player who I feel has done the same thing is Khalid Shafii, centre-back from Traktor Sazi, who is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated centre-backs in Iran. And he was heavily linked with Esterlal. Everyone thought he was going to sign, and then suddenly he turned out with FC Seoul in South Korea, which is, I think, one of the most surprising transfers I've ever seen. But it's very impressive to me that he's taken that risk. Considering that Kerush is looking for another centre-back as well, of course, we've heard the rumours that Ryan Tafazoli of Peterborough in England has been linked to switching nationalities to Iran. I think one of his parents is Iranian. Do you think this could be a very crucial move for Khalid Shafii, and we could possibly see one of the defenders who will play for Iran this time next year in the World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, the thing to remember here is that Kyrgios says he picks the best players of Iran at that practice, at that game, to be the starters. So I think that's, it's important to remember for these guys trying to get ahead and trying to get their trying to get a good reputation. And the fact that these guys' ambitions are high, it says a lot. And it is, I thought it was a little bit funny that he signed with FC Seoul. I can't remember, is, unless I'm wrong, I think the only other Team Elite player to sign with the East Asian team has been Por Laganji. But that was a few years back, and he went back to, I think, Qatar, and so. But yeah, in terms of Rezaian going to Belgium, is it that? Yeah, because of Guchan Ajad, because of Azmoun, several of these other guys getting big reputations in Europe, and you know, and that opens the door for these guys to try to really to make their case as good defenders or good forwards in Europe, and I think it does give them some leeway with coaches and consideration because of that reputation that the national team is building, and these up and coming guys can use that as an asset to make their case to Kyrgios, because I mean he definitely knows these European leagues cultures and what they expect and what these guys are trying to do. So I mean, what one can hope, I mean, the more competitive the field gets for these players trying to make the roster, the better, and especially if we get to schedule more of these friendlies, as what Kyrgios has on his wish list. I think he said like upwards of like 10 friendlies or something like that before the 23-man roster is released in next June. I mean, hopefully if Team Elite does indeed get all those friendlies, I mean, that's just more games for all these different players to be called up on, and especially if they're making the leaps to these leagues. I mean, that's all you can ask for. So one can only hope that they do well and stay healthy.
Osbin, Khalid Shafii is an interesting player for me because having watched him, he has the ability to play with both of his feet, which is very rare for a central defender. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why a South Korean club has taken the risk on him, since their league technically is a lot better than the Iranian league. But I'm going to ask you the same question. Do you think... First, how do you think he will do in FC Seoul and in South Korea? And do you think this could be a move that not just forces him into the squad, but with the aging of Pejman Muntazeri and Jalal Hosseini, do you think he could really push himself for a starting spot if he does well and he succeeds in South Korea?
Well, I think he wouldn't have made that decision to go to South Korea without really thinking about it. He's an experienced footballer. He's 29. So he also knows that this is probably his one of the well, I mean, he'll have a few years, but he's now in the peak of his career. So I think he is confident that he can perform, and we have seen him perform well. There's no reason why he shouldn't continue. Of course, there'll be challenges, and he'll have to adapt to the new style of football that played, a new country and culture, and the language barrier. But he clearly has thought through all of this, and he wouldn't have gone unless he was confident that he could manage. And you touched upon a good point there, the fact that he's two-footed. We've seen more and more how teams, how managers and coaches and just expect the players to be able to play with the ball at their feet. That includes centre-backs, and we've seen, with Guardiola, we've seen how that needs to apply to goalkeepers as well, which has resulted in some funny moments throughout the Premier League with Claudio Bravo, but that's another point. I think he can perform well, and linking that through his potential to make a name for himself in Team Melli. Yeah, absolutely. Why not? He's now going to be on Kirosh's radar. I'm sure Kirosh is going to keep up with his progress, or perhaps watch him, or send one of his staff to do so. So yeah, absolutely. Kirosh, as I said before, Kirosh has said himself that he wants players to move, to Europe is what he says. But a move abroad, regardless, is going to put the spotlight on you, and now that's a platform on which he can hopefully perform. And then, yeah, as you said, replace the aging Montazeri or Hosseini, and maybe become a partner for Puyi Aligenji, who's very impressive, also a good passer of the ball, as we've seen when he plays in that defensive midfielder position, although he hasn't played there for a while, but we know that he can play there, and we know that he can pass the ball. I think it's looking good. Hopefully he can perform and get himself that spot and give some competition to the current centre-backs. As Samson said earlier, competition is just going to breed better players for the team. So if we can get more players, better players with different experiences involved, that's great.
Pejman, there's two other interesting moves that are happening. One is Ehsan Hoj Safi's 99% signature for Panionios, the club that also has Masoud Shojaei and is Karim Ansarifa's former club as well. Hoj Safi has decided to move to Greece. We've seen him pictured at the airport with the Panionios scarf. So it's almost a done deal. What do you think about that one? And also, Ptolemy has been given permission by Persepolis to speak to European clubs, and Persepolis manager Branko Ivankovic has confirmed this, and he has supposedly offers from Olympiakos in Greece and Dynamo Zagreb in Croatia. What do you think about these two moves, and specifically with the Ptolemy one, since he had a failure this time last year with his move to Turkey? What do you think? How do you think that one will develop?
Yeah, well, starting off with Hoj Safi with 99%. Usually, I'm always trusting that 1% when it comes to Iranian transfers, but hopefully, I'll be proven wrong because we've seen him in the airport in Greece. So, hopefully, he will get a contract and everything goes well. I think it was start with Hoj Safi. It was a wrong move from him coming back from Germany, although it was the second Bundesliga, but he was a regular player. I'm sure some other team in the second Bundesliga, or maybe a lower team in the first Bundesliga, would be interesting to sign him. I don't know why he wanted to return to Iran. Maybe this guy miss Iran and the fame and being like semi-god too much. I don't know, so I won't say about that. But I'm glad that he chose once again to leave Iran, because he's too good, in my opinion, to be playing in the Iranian league, but he's not good enough to think that he will earn a spot in the first 11. So with some European experience, maybe that can change. With Taremi, it's quite interesting because what he and Ramin Rezaian did in Turkey was really embarrassing. And what he did when he returned, he was like almost crying and begging for forgiveness. I mean, who the hell are your advisors, and what are you thinking? What are you doing? I mean, I don't know if this guy is lost or he's just a nice guy people keep fooling and making money off. I don't know. But he's now given a second chance because he had a really good season in Persepolis and also in a national team. He scored vital goals and he's got a really good record. So for Taremi, he should really this time make a wise decision if he will be offered a contract somewhere. I don't think Olympiacos is not suited for him. They will have they have the budgets or at least the ambitions to play regularly in the Champions League and advance to the second round. And then I don't know, trusting all their money and leaving all the money on Taremi is kind of a risk. Dinamo Zagreb is also one of the biggest Croatian clubs. But then, you know, at least you have maybe Branko Ivanković giving him some praise and building some trust there. Whatever he does, I hope he won't end up in Qatar. I mean, I'm glad even if he goes to a really weak league in Europe or a weak team as well. It doesn't need to be Belgium and Holland, although I think he's good enough for that. But at least leave Iran and develop somewhere else. I hope it will become true, and I hope really that he will find a club that he can grow mentally, because I think mentally this guy really needs some professional football help, not professional help in general, but professional football help to become that killer that I think he has in him.
I agree with your final points on his mental strength, but Samson, I spoke to a Croatian journalist recently, and he said that Dinamo Zagreb have actually spoken to Branko Ivanković about a recommendation from him over Mehdi Taremi and what his thoughts are. So there seems to be a serious interest from there, which I think is probably the best option for him, considering Dinamo Zagreb, similarly to Persepolis, are the biggest club in Croatia. So that sort of playing for a big team, it kind of suits him. What do you think about that, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, he knows how to score goals, if I'm correct, and you know, any exposure that he's getting, especially from a good team in Croatia, can only do good for him. I mean, the more diverse level of playing that he's exposed to, the better, because he's a player that can definitely benefit from that and grow more, because he has a long way to go and is developed, but he's already a good player. So I think why not? And I think if they take the bait and want to sign him, then I think he could definitely compete for a starting job. I mean, it's not, you know, they're not overwhelmed with talent over there, and especially with the guy that scored some goals for Iran. I mean, why not? Right? In theory, it could work, but you know, you never know how these things go. But it does help with the connection with Ivanković telling them what's up. So I definitely would hope that communication goes well, and that he can that there can be something there, because I mean, you know, why not?
Yeah, I think you guys make a good point. It would be a move to Dinamo Zagreb would be good. One of the strongest, if not the best, team historically in Croatia. I think the main thing with any player transferring, but Taremi especially, is a striker and a striker who is approaching the prime of his career. You know, he's been playing a lot of first team football, scoring well for the national team. But he can still develop. He's still young enough, only 24, 25, quite soon. The most important thing for him is to get first team football. So whether that, you know, he needs to be in the starting lineup, scoring goals, whether that's in Dinamo Zagreb or one of the five top Greek clubs that he's been linked with, he needs to make sure that he goes somewhere where he's guaranteed first team football regularly. That's the main thing, especially at that age. He can't be spending any time on the bench. He needs to go somewhere where he thinks he can play as much as he, well, where he is, he's ensured to play as much as he can.
Talking of strikers, another striker who's had a long summer of transfer sagas and rumours is Sadır Özmün, who has been linked with a move away from Rostov. We all thought this is the time for him to move to Western Europe and play in one of the top five leagues, which he has the ability, of course. But in the last few days, there's been some surprising developments, and we saw him turning up at Rubin Kazan's training camp in Austria, and he was pictured in the club's training kits, and of course his mentor Korban Berdiev has recently taken charge of Rubin, so that clearly has had an impact on his decision. But again, his move hasn't been confirmed by anyone. And in the Italian press, there's been rumours of Lazio making a bid for him and getting in talks with Rostov for his transfer. So there's a lot of stories going on around Osman's future. But Otmin, coming back to you on this, what do you think would be the right move for him at this stage? Do you think staying in Russia, which clearly he's loving life in Russia, do you think that would be a wise choice for him, especially with Rubin? Or do you think now is the time for him to really take that risk and move to West Europe?
So I'm going to be honest. When I heard that he was in talks with Rubin Kazan, I was absolutely flabbergasted. I mean, I just couldn't understand why he was. It didn't make any sense. Apart from, as you said, Berdiev is someone who's clearly quite attached to. They're both of Turkmen origin. Well, Berdiev is from Turkmenistan, so I can understand that. But it seems the backwards move. The fans didn't seem to like him the way he left when he went to Rostov. There was all of that sort of the legality of it was of that transfer was brought into question, and he went to the courts. But I think in terms of from a pure footballing perspective, I think it's the wrong move. He's now at the right time where he needs to step up and go to the next level, and going to Kazan would be a step down. He's had with Kazan, he had Europa League experience. He's had the season before last, a great run in the Russian league where they finished second and could have won the league up until the last game day. And then he had a good Champions League experience this season with Rostov, scored against Atletico Madrid, scored against Bayern Munich, and made Boateng one of the best defenders in the world look like a fool. And before that, he scored against both Ajax and Anderlecht. So, you know, his name is out there. People will know about him. And hopefully these rumours of Lazio, which were in a few days, 3-4 days ago, Football Italia, a well-respected platform for Italian football news, wrote that Lazio were interested, having lost out on Borini, as he is now gone to AC Milan, Fabio Borini from Sunderland. So that would be a good move. I think that would be a very good move, hopefully. I don't know how much substance there is in that rumour, but it's definitely, if it's on the table, it's definitely something he should pursue. He can be, we will all agree on that he is the best striker Iran has had since Ali Daei, and we haven't really had anyone perform even half as well as Ali Daei since he retired in that number 9 position. I mean, we've had Muchan Najad for a few years, but still Özmün needs to now step up and really take himself to that European level where he is getting not only playing in a top club and by in a top league, and by that I mean one of the top four or five leagues in Europe, but he also needs to play for one of the better teams in those leagues, get himself European football, international European football, and just become a better player.
Pejman, as has been said, his record in the Champions League is great. You know, we saw some fantastic performances against likes of Bayern Munich and Atletico Madrid, but his goal scoring record in the domestic league for Rostov is not that impressive. And I feel like this is what's been putting off some of the European clubs from making a move for him. But also, odds being said that it would be a step down for Osman.
Sorry, I lost connection. Could you please tell me the question again?
Yes, of course. I said he had a great record in the Champions League with some great performances, but his goal scoring record in the domestic league wasn't that impressive. But going to Rubin, I know that Outbeen said it would be a step down, but I look at the Rubin Kazan squad and I feel like there are better players for him to play with. He'll be surrounded with much better players such as Alex Song, Jan Envia, Karadeniz, you know, much better players than what he was playing with at Rostov. So maybe it doesn't seem as bad of a move as it might come across as first. What are your thoughts?
Well, in this question, I think a lot of us tend to think with our hearts rather than our minds, and I think we all love to see Osmoun in a bigger and better league and club as well. So moving once again domestically in Russia is kind of frustrating for us fans. So I'm trying to understand him as a football player. And the football player Osmoun is like in Russia. I'm now at least a well-known name. I will play regularly or at least every game, either as a starter or I will play like 30 minutes, something like that. You have his mentor in Berdyaev in Rubin Kazan, which seems to be far more important for him than most of us seem to think, because we know that he have got some good offers from other countries, and he said it himself as well. So I'm trying to understand Osmoun here, and I think that he maybe could be worried that leaving Russia would be a gamble for him, like maybe not be able to get any playtime in a bigger club such as Lazio. I don't think that he thinks that he will lose his spot in the squad, but maybe he won't be a regular starter in the national team, because right now he's more or less number one, even though we have Ansar Fahd, Taremi, Qutshan Nejad in more or less the same position. So maybe he wants to keep it safe to the World Cup. And after the World Cup, if Iran and he himself will play good, then he can choose more or less whatever country he feels that he wants to play in. So I think we can manage one more year in Russia with Rubin. But I hope I'm wrong, because I too want to see him in Bologna, Atalanta, wherever, just, you know, leave Russia now.
I have a really interesting quote here. I mean, there was, after he was seen at the Rubin Kazan training camp, there was a lot of made up rumours in Iran that he has a contract with Berdyaev and this is the reason why he's moved to Kazan, which of course is untrue. But it brought out a reaction from Osmoun, in which he gave an interview. And one of the quotes is that there is no 10-year contract with Berdyaev, but I have a lifetime contract with him. I owe him my career and I'm willing to follow him wherever he goes. So that's for me, that's really interesting, because that shows that even if there is an interest from Lazio, from any other club, that he's really willing to move with Berdyaev willing to work on the bed, yeah, because he's enjoying it. So for me, when I read that, there's really no doubt in my mind that the move to Rubin Kazan will go through. But what are your thoughts? I've been heard, of course, the quotes from himself, but also what Artsbin and Pejman had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note that he's still 22 years old. So I think he's still far from his prime. His prime can last in the next 5 years, 6 years or more. But I think if you want to think efficiently, to not be too greedy, I guess, and land in a big team right now, maybe not be able to get as much playing time, and then in preparation for a World Cup year, I think maybe he could spend one more year over there, and I think one more year could definitely be enough to sign with a bigger club. But I mean, right now, I mean, anything that's getting him in decent, that's keeping him in good shape and making sure that he's not losing his spot as a consistent starter with Team Elite, or having any fallouts or injuries, then I think it's not. It's not something to be worried about per se right now. Now, if this is going on again next year, where he can't, or he's not actively trying to sign with someone else like a Lazio or anyone else, then I think he needs to make the leap. I think Kiro should give him some guidance, but I mean, if he takes one more year, I wouldn't be upset about it. But if he does indeed land at Lazio, if it's a good deal for him, he would get good playing time to compete, then that would obviously do wonders for him in a perfect situation. Whether it's a perfect situation is still be sought out. I mean, we don't know the exact details, but yeah, I digress. If he wants to stay there for one more year, that's I think that's okay. But I don't think his future and his prime lies in the Russian league.
That's perfect. Thank you very much, guys. That's all we have for today's episode. Of course, I'd like to thank Pejmanopars and our new contributors, Artsbin Mayedi and Samson Tamijani, for their fantastic insights. But let's keep the conversation going on Twitter. You can tweet us at Golbezan. That's GOLBEZAN. Guys, thank you very much for joining me today. Hopefully, first of many podcasts that you guys will be coming on. But that's all we have. Thank you for listening. And until next time, goodbye.
Yeah, thanks.